Peter, tell us all about yourself.
I'm a licensed acupuncturist and Chinese herbalist. I'm board certified in Oriental medicine, and I graduated from Tri-State College here in New York City in 1999. I've been practicing acupuncture and Chinese medicine for 13 years here in the Big Apple. I got interested in alternative medicine and Chinese acupuncture and Oriental medicine through personal experience. My undergraduate, I would end up getting strep throat pretty much every semester, so it was kind of stress related, and this just happened for years and years and years. And I used to see a regular doctor, and of course he would prescribe antibiotics and tell me to rest and get fluids and so on and so forth. And it would help, but it never really got rid of it, and I got uncomfortable with, you know, all the antibiotics and, you know, same old every semester. And I started asking around. This was actually in Hawaii, in Honolulu, and this one name kept popping up, this naturopathic physician, this name kept popping up in different circles, and I thought, well, if that's not a good, you know, signal to go check this guy out, I don't know what is. And sure enough, you know, that coming semester, you know, I got strep throat, horrible, you know, sore throat and cough and all of it. And I sought him out. And this guy did, you know, really serious intake, about three pages of material and lots of education and so on and so forth. And he tells me, okay, lay down on the table. He had a massage table, and he says, do you want to do acupuncture? And I said, are you crazy? And I said, no way. And he said, well, there's other things we can do. And this was about 25 years ago. And he broke out two tuning forks, C-note tuning forks, and he wrapped them on the table, got a vibration going, and then placed them on my back, a couple of shoe points, bladder points that work for the organs, for the lungs. And felt very strange to me, but very good at the same time. And did some massage, did some digestive, you know, abdominal massage, and then gave me an herbal tincture. And he said, listen, go home and rest. And it disappeared. I never had strep throat, actually, up until this last year, you know, many years later. And it amazed me. And he and I started a conversation about what he was doing. At that point, I was interested in medicine. I was telling everyone I'm going to go to medical school, and that's something I want to be as a trauma surgeon and all that. And he said, well, you know, there's some other options. And he introduced me to, you know, naturopathic medicine, alternative care. And so I started on this path. I've been doing acupuncture here for 13 years, and I see all sorts of different clients. I'm kind of a general practitioner, although I do specialize in central nervous system disorders, Parkinson's, traumatic brain injury, stroke, rehabilitation. I worked for many years in underserved populations, worked in homeless shelters and detoxes and various agencies here in New York, community-based organizations, where I treat people that generally don't get a lot of care. And it's a great feeling to help people that are not used to getting help. I got into medicine because I saw people around me, family members, myself, you know, folks just running around on the planet that needed help. And I was always looking for alternatives and other ways to do what we do here. And, you know, got interested, and I've continued this path. It's an ongoing process, and I'm grateful to be in a profession and an art that continues to challenge me, and I grow in the process.
Many listeners have heard about acupuncture, but know little about it. How would you describe acupuncture, its history, development, and uses?
Acupuncture is part of a rich tradition that dates thousands of years old. Include within acupuncture, Chinese medicine is kind of the umbrella. And that includes acupuncture, moxibustion, herbs, gua sha, which is a scraping therapy, cupping, tui na, massage, bone setting, jie gu, which looks a lot like American orthopedic medicine, dietary education, qigong, tai chi, and of course all sorts of different plasters and liniments. Chinese medicine is kind of umbrella for a lot of different therapies, many of them folk medicine type things, including the gua sha and the cupping, various things you'll see in many cultures, not just in China. I always like to start off with acupuncture and Chinese medicine in terms of giving people an overview of where it comes from. The quote I like to use is something from the Acupuncture Comprehensive Text, which most acupuncture students have seen. And the quote goes like this, and it talks about you know, how Chinese medicine looks at healing. And it says the sense of phenomenon as intertwined patterns has important ramifications. There's an overwhelming sense of context, events, or objects that by themselves have no meaning. Meaning is derived from participation in patterns. From this grows the feeling that all things are closely related to each other. And what that basically is saying is that Chinese medicine places the emphasis almost totally on function, and what happens is considered more important than what something has come to look like. And that's opposed to traditional kind of Western science and medicine that looks at a linear discursion fashion where we're used to judging our environment with dissection and analysis until you can find the causal links which explain the system. Western scientists in general try and analyze phenomena by breaking it down into constituents, and then they believe they've understood it by looking at the parts. So that, you know, classic, sum of the parts is equal to the whole. The ancient Chinese, like people all over the world going back for tens of thousands of years, were very interested in matters of spirituality as well as matters of the physical universe. And the Taoists were primarily the folks running around trying to figure this out. And they merged their search for truth to include both the physical and spiritual realms. And the result was that they had to incorporate both what they saw and what they could touch with what they couldn't touch and what they could only feel. The Chinese science developed different laws than those in the West. So it wasn't just hard science. They even created a symbol for their unique scientific system to demonstrate the inclusion of both this physical and spiritual natures of the world, and that's the Tai Chi yin-yang symbol, which really is duality. They also use, you know, the major underpinnings for Chinese medicine, including yin-yang, would be the five phases, and some people are familiar with those. That's fire, earth, metal, water, and wood. And these, as I said, these are the underpinnings for how we practice Chinese medicine. The structure of the cosmos mirrors the five phases. So we're really looking at relationships, not discrete pieces of, you know, data. And each phase has a complete series of associations with different aspects of nature. The five phases are not connected only to Chinese medicine. They're used throughout Chinese development, feng shui, astrology. They're used in music and military strategy and the martial arts and so on and so forth. The main thing that comes down here, and the reason I talk about this, is that when you talk about medicine, you're really talking about science to some extent, whereas in Western science we used yardsticks to measure things. The Chinese realized that these measurements, everything was always in a state of change, so therefore they believed that measurements would change. So they couldn't necessarily accept that everything was static and then you could measure it and then you could quantify it and then you could describe it. And so what they did come up with is looking at that there's always change in looking at the pattern. And the pattern is that things rise and they peak and then they decline. And that's the yardstick they used, basically looking at the totality of the system, not discrete points. That lends itself much better to looking at, you know, a living system rather than, you know, taking individual constituents of that system. It dates back to the Zhao dynasty, which is 2700 BC, and the writings are about this, some people call it a mythological emperor, the Yellow Emperor. A lot of the materials that were developed during his reign were burned in later reigns by other emperors.
One of your specialties is Chinese scalp acupuncture. What is Chinese scalp acupuncture, and what is its history?
Unlike traditional Chinese medicine or classical Chinese medicine, scalp acupuncture is fairly new. It's been around about 50 years. And it's a microsystem. It's employed for acute and chronic central nervous system disorders. And as I said, it includes treatments for stroke, traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's, and other movement disorders. Its roots date back nearly 5,000 years using needles and using acupuncture points. But the system currently practiced has only been used in the last, you know, 50 years. A variety of personalities, both in the United States and China, developed it. Dr. Zhao Xunfei is a neurosurgeon. Dr. Xu Shui Min and Dr. Zhu Mingqing and other researchers here and China formed and developed this process, they're Western-trained doctors in some senses, along with the Chinese traditional medicine. They've synthesized both Western medical practice and acupuncture to build this system into practice. Both the NIH and the World Health Organization support its use in central nervous system disorders. To give you an example of Chinese scalp acupuncture in China, and it is becoming more popular and more available here, Tianjin Hospital, which is in northern China, treated, and this is in 2009, 358,000 stroke cases. To give you a comparison here in the United States with a reputable hospital, some of the top hospitals that are cited, the Mayo Clinic treated 4,000 stroke cases during that 2009, and Massachusetts General Hospital treated 1,300 cases. The use of scalp acupuncture for central nervous system disorders is a big thing in China and very accepted and very effective, whereas here we get to compete with Western medical practice. The mechanism for scalp acupuncture is it accesses the reflex somatotropic system, so just the body form. It's a microsystem, and the system communicates with the body via the endocrine and nervous system. Qualified scalp acupuncture stimulates these reflex areas through acupuncture needles between the scalp and the cranium, and it's strong stimulations, and they stimulate these reflex areas, the cortical areas of the brain governing motor activity, sensory input, vision, speech, hearing, and balance are all affected. And while the clinician is actually stimulating these areas, an assistant or the patient will actually move the affected area. So the patient will attempt to utilize the affected area, say if there's some paralysis or some weakness of the arm or of the leg. While the acupuncture is actually stimulating the needle, the patient or the acupuncturist assistant will move the areas, and these actions retrain the brain and the body.
Tell listeners more. You've got everybody on the edge of their seats. How can Chinese scalp acupuncture be used, and what exactly can people expect when they actually take advantage of this particular modality?
Well, most patients need multiple treatments and to affect lasting change in treatment. The advantage to scalp acupuncture is that it can easily be integrated into existing treatments, while decreasing rehabilitation time and maximizing the benefits of mainstream therapies. So it's easily integrated in present systems. Generally, 2 to 3 treatments per week for 4 to 6 weeks is a course of treatment. And multiple courses are indicated depending on the individual needs, whether it be chronic care or acute care. And it's not unusual to see definite results immediately, and subsequent gains also depend on the individual. It's important to remember that early intervention is the key. My experience with the acupuncture treatment for Parkinson's is that I had a client come in who had a fair amount of weakness, and we would test objectively and subjectively his function, and then during the treatment actually have him utilize doing rotations, doing movement. And as he was doing this movement, I was stimulating the points. Then when we tested afterwards, he's much stronger. Balance feels more solid to him. He's actually able to stand on one foot for longer, a whole variety of things. This particular individual had some swallowing issues, had some trouble with feeling like he couldn't quite swallow, which is characteristic of some patient's symptoms. And that eased up too. Acupuncture, it needs to be looked at in terms of the totality of treatment. Whereas often with Western medicine, what's the symptom? We need to address the system. Let's treat that. Versus with alternative care, Chinese medicine, where you actually have somebody, this particular person had some sleep issues, and that's not particularly what he was coming from, but his sleep got better, his swallowing got better, his outlook in general got better. And so you see the specific complaints decreasing, but then in other areas, you see changes, too, that are beneficial for the patient.
to be clear for myself, then, if I were to come to New York City, the Big Apple, and get a treatment from you, I would lie down on a table. You would probably then put some acupuncture needles in my head or on my scalp. And then would you leave the room and let me kind of lie there for 30 minutes or 45 minutes, or do you stay there in the room with me? How does it work exactly?
We do both, depending on the patient. In some cases, you actually sit in a chair and move. In some cases, you lie down and relax, and some of this has to do with the patient and what they're willing to do. I get cases where clients are just like, I just need to relax today, and we'll lay you down and turn down the lights and turn up a little, you know, soft music and just let you, you know, kind of go into that place where it's comfortable. And then sometimes we'll push you some. And some of the premier scalp places in the United States and in China, you'll actually have people doing what would look like to most folks physical therapy or orthopedic, you know, exercises while they've got needles in the scalp. And they'll have somebody coming along and stimulating those points as they're going. It's very interesting. I should say it can be very helpful for patients with Parkinson's disease, whether in early or later stages, and it can improve mobility, range of motion, muscle tone, balance, gait, and the ability to swallow are some of the specifics that people complain about. It's very interesting in the way it affects people, and it can be plugged into a lot of the existing things they're doing.
I'm Robert Rogers from Parkinson's Recovery. My guest today is Peter Doyle, acupuncturist from New York City. So, Peter, how has your approach to acupuncture changed since you actually graduated from acupuncture school?
When I left acupuncture school, it's an interesting process. I started out with, you know, pretty basic musculoskeletal treatments, pain and these type of things, help people with neck ache, back ache, shoulder pain, digestive problems, various kind of pretty straightforward medical issues. And I was actually trained in acupuncture school at Tri-State with scalp acupuncture for stroke. In fact, in my internship, there was a medical doctor that would come in who had spasticity in the calf, his arm, had hemiplegia, basically. He would come in and get treatment. We would do scalp acupuncture, we would do body acupuncture, and we would do electrostim. And this man, this doctor, claimed that he felt much better. When I actually looked at him, I didn't see much change physically in the way he was moving. And so I concluded that, you know, it was helpful to him, but, you know, that it wasn't that dramatic. Since then, what I've seen is issues where you see big, big changes in people in the way they move and their capabilities and their function and the way they feel. And when I started investigating who was initially treating these cases, I was noticing that the way they were doing it was very different from the way I was trained. They were doing very aggressive treatment. They were doing very frequent treatment. They were doing, instead of just having somebody lay there and get the acupuncture, they were actually having them move and go through the paces and walk and stomp one foot and, you know, do you know, pretty aggressive treatment and quite active, you know, the patient was participating quite a bit, working very hard. When I saw this, I realized I needed to go back and look at what particularly was happening if I wanted to achieve these dramatic results. As I was saying, most acupuncturists can treat pretty basic stuff and effectively treat, but when it comes to more chronic issues that are quite debilitating and you know, quite disturbing to clients, you want to give them much more. You know, I've charged myself with, you know, doing that, with getting better and getting better effects and working with people and, you know, being more committed to their health process along, you know, with them doing that too.
Why is Chinese scalp acupuncture not accepted into rehabilitation settings in the United States?
Well, it slowly is, but what you're seeing is that acupuncture in general is, the way it's been explained to Western doctors is not adequate. And when it comes to a Western-trained physician, we need to speak their language. And that's something that is happening slowly. There's less storytelling in Chinese medicine. You've got to remember, it's been taken out of context, I'll give you an example of Chinese medicine and the development here. The character for qi, which is actually a pictograph, has been translated in various methods. Often you'll hear that it's translated as energy or vital force. But if you actually look at the picture graph, and sinologists break down the different radicals and portions of that character, you'll see that it can also be translated as literally a steam off of rice cooking. So a rarefied energy from food might be one way you could look at it. If you talk to a Western doctor about qi or shen or meridians or channels or so on and so forth, and you don't have specific Western data to back that up that's both accessible, believable, and useful to them, they tend to just put a question mark on it. It seems like, oh, most doctors nowadays will recommend acupunctures for certain conditions, but with scalp acupuncture and, you know, Parkinson's, TBI, these type of cases, traumatic brain injury, they're fairly skeptical about its use. I'll give you an example. There's a hospital here in New York that has an acupuncture program in the rehabilitative portion of the hospital. They're considered one of the premier folks here in New York City. And when I spoke to the director of that acupuncture program, they are doing no scalp acupuncture in cases that would be absolutely, you know, fantastic candidates for this. And it's going to be a process of educating the doctors to do this. The other thing that governs what's done in mainstream hospitals is what's billable. And acupuncture services in terms of insurance are limited in most states and certainly in most hospitals. So the job for us acupuncturists is actually to find hospitals that are open-minded enough and willing enough and then integrate ourselves in a way that's respectful to the current system, but yet to be able to push the system a little bit into integrating, you know, alternative therapy and to actually demonstrate efficacy and results and make that part of the best practice model in terms of, you know, mainstream hospitals and, you know, clinics and rehabilitation areas.
Peter Doyle, listeners, I'm sure at this point are thinking, where can I go to actually receive a Chinese scalp acupuncture treatment? What's the answer?
There's actually dozens of places throughout the United States that you can receive scalp acupuncture for central nervous system disorders. The key to it is finding qualified practitioners, and they're spread out. There's a few of them on the West Coast. There's a few of them in the Southwest. I'm here in New York City, here actually in Manhattan, and I can be reached. The contact information is listed on the show and on the blog.
It sounds like from your experience working with individuals who currently experience the symptoms of Parkinson's that Chinese scalp acupuncture really does help.
It's very effective. Current research confirms clinical experience that reputable practitioners have, indicating its effectiveness, and they include, you know, increased motor function, decreased tremor, maximization of sensory utilization, reduced spasticity, reduction of aphasia and dysphagia, and better overall rehabilitation. You actually have to see it. You actually have to try it. And everyone's a little bit different on what the results are going to be, but it's something that I'm committed to, and a lot of the existing practitioners that have stated that they're going to do this and learn this, and certainly there's people that have been doing it for decades now. It's fascinating and it's gratifying. It's a great thing.
How can people get in touch with you?
They can reach me at my number, 917-836-6834. My website is qigardener.com. That's QIGARDENER.com. I'm here in New York City in the Flatiron District, 19th and Broadway, Suite 404, 900 Broadway.
What are your views regarding mainstream treatment for Parkinson's disease?
The mainstream treatment it's not enough. There's new stuff that they're using that seems to be effective in very severe cases, but I think there needs to be more early intervention. There needs to be more of a perspective of this isn't a death sentence. This is something that's manageable, that we can slow or reverse the progression in some cases, that we actually can help people have a good lifestyle, and that you know, your only options aren't drugs or surgery or, you know, something that seems to not work for everybody. I sincerely believe that there needs to be an attitude of respect and a synergy within Western practices, Western hospitals, Western doctors, Western clinics, where we're taking a little bit of all the things that work the best and forming a best practice model.
For each show that I air, there are always individuals who have been just diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. What would you like to say to them right now?
The first thing I would say is that while this might be a shock, while this might be an incredible challenge and perhaps even something that's very difficult to process, that you're not alone, that there's people out there, both fellow patients who are going through the same thing, and clinicians that have not only a stake in professionally treating people, but have family members or friends that are, you know, they have an investment in making a difference in people that they really care about, that their heart and their, you know, and their expertise are connected to, and that's the key, that this isn't, you know, this isn't just a diagnosis and, hey, that's the end, I just get to deal with it. That there are resources like the Parkinson's Recovery Blog, that there are resources like Dr. Zhu Ming in San Jose, there's resources like Dr. Zhao in Santa Fe, there's folks like myself in New York, that there's Qigong practitioners out there, that there's nutritionists, that there's a woman in Colorado that's doing a biofeedback type therapy that seems to be very effective, that there are a lot of resources out there, and to enter into this process with some discernment, but also with some hope that there is appropriate treatment and effective treatment for this condition. What necessarily might happen to one person or what your doctor might be telling you may not be your story.
Peter Doyle, on behalf of all listeners today, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the radio show today.
It was a pleasure.